That is not the same as selling my juniors. What I've learned arithmetically is that by selling between 25 and 30% of my junior portfolio, I recoup all the capital that I put in the sector for 5 years. I reach what I call the point of no concern. I will then be playing on the house's money.
So, Rick, I have this concern and tension, and it's I've been working through it, and maybe you're going to be my therapist here for the next little while. And I mean that is, I have this concern that we're right, and it looks like things are playing out not as planned per se. Who knows exactly what the future holds, and it's very hard, especially to hit the short term, but right now, October, I think this is the first of the month, things are playing out as we have talked about, whether that's a lot of internal and external conflict in the world, a lot of money printing in the world, a lot of taxation in the world, everything. And it really, gold and silver have really, I think, indicated that. Help me work through that. What are your thoughts on where we're at and dealing with what we're going into, what we seem to be going into?
Well, first of all, let me say that concern is part of becoming a good investor. So, congratulations for being concerned. Always question your premise, always question the market that you're in, always question the information that you're receiving, and always question your process. So, first of all, congratulations for being concerned.
Thank
Now,
you.
three ways to answer the question. First of all, being concerned about being right. The truth is that being right around the precious metals narrative involves concern. Precious metals do well when people are concerned about the maintenance of the purchasing power of the US dollar. So the fact that you're concerned that the set of circumstances is permissive for gold and silver is right in many regards. The set of circumstances that makes that part of our portfolio do well is, in fact, concerning. My belief is that the US dollar loses 75% of its absolute purchasing power over the next 10 years. That is concerning. On the level of your life, on the level of our society, the circumstance that we're seeing unfolding in front of us today is concerning. We will get through this, and I know that's not the concern you're talking about, but I want to tell you that. When Eric Sprott bought my business and I became part of Sprott. I remember having very deep conversations with Eric. And I said, you know, Eric, as an investor, what would you see as the flaws in my style? He said, Rick, you're afraid to be right. When
I
the set of
completely
circumstances,
relate. I completely relate. Go ahead.
he said, when the set of circumstances, particularly micro circumstances around the firms that you're investing in, is correct, go. Go. So that's the first modifier, I would say. The second modifier is time. If I'm correct, the next 10 years, if we see a decline in the absolute purchasing power of the order of magnitude I suggest, 75%, I suspect that the gold price, at least in nominal terms, US dollar terms, will reflect the decline in the US dollar. Which is to say, it wouldn't surprise me over 10 years to see the gold price in nominal terms, not real terms, but nominal terms, rise three or fourfold. This isn't out of line. In the decade of the 70s, the last time the US dollar lost 75% of its purchasing power, the gold price ran 30-fold. It's important to note that since 2000, the gold price has already run 12 or 13-fold. So don't be looking for a 30-fold return from here. In the decade of the 70s, the gold stocks as a group, measured then by the Philadelphia Gold and Silver Stock Index, outperformed gold about 2 to 1. I have no idea if that holds today. I suspect it doesn't because there are so many more of them that the probability of laggards and scams is higher. But If they outperform the bullion, which I think they will, what that means is that over 10 years, we have a very good market in front of us. Your audience, however, doesn't live in 10-year increments or even 5-year increments. Many of your audience has trauma holding stock over a long weekend. And for that audience, you have an absolute right to be concerned. The gold equities are on fire. And the bull market that we've seen, while it's followed a traditional pattern, which is to say, led by the bullion, then by the best of the best, then by the best of the rest, the progression down the quality trail, the progression from very conservative to speculative, has taken place in record time. The financing windows for juniors isn't open, it's wide open. Juniors with questionable values are going out to raise $5 million and coming back with 15. That means in the near term, this market is concerning to me. Concerning enough that I am right now, and have been for 2 weeks, selling enough of my junior portfolio that I take all of the capital I have invested in the sector off the table. That is not the same as selling my juniors. What I've learned arithmetically is that by selling between 25 and 30% of my junior portfolio, I recoup all the capital that I put in the sector for 5 years. I reach what I call the point of no concern. I will then be playing on the house's money. The phrase point of no concern is to differentiate it from holding stocks into a bear market. That's called the point of no return. I have the ability, by selling some of my portfolio, which I'm doing now, to give up between 25 and 30% of my upside in turn for reducing 100% of my downside, including the capital gains tax. So I'm going to do it. Portfolio management is individual. You will notice that I believe that the gold equities over 10 years likely, I'm not saying certainly because I don't know, likely generate a 500% nominal return over 10 years. My supposition, my theory, is not a fact. The fact that I can sell 25 to 30% of my junior portfolio and recoup 100% of my invested capital is fact.
Right.
So this is personal, if you understand what I'm saying. Yes, I believe the sector is going higher. Yes, I believe it's going much higher. On a personal level, I don't care. By the way, I'm putting a reasonable amount of that cash back into gold, physical gold, and back into the best of the best gold stocks, which is to say, I'm maintaining the beta in my portfolio, defining beta as the amount by which the gold sector outperforms the broad market. I'm reducing the alpha, even though I think it's going higher. I would refresh the memories of the older part of your audience and introduce a memory to the younger part of the audience. In the decade of the 1970s, the gold price ran from $35 an ounce at the beginning of the decade to $850 an ounce at the end of the decade. Pretty good run. In the middle of that run in 1975, the gold price fell by half and the gold equities fell by more than 60%. You can have a 50% decline in a secular bull market, a cyclical decline in a secular bull market. There were a lot of people who went into 1975, real hardcore gold bugs, who had their faith shaken and got shaken out. Those who got shaken out missed a move. From $100 an ounce at the bottom in 1975 to $850 an ounce. By taking all of my money off the table, I will not be shaken out. When I'm operating on the house's money, if I believe my thesis is sound, I become extraordinarily patient. So that's where
Yeah.
I am. I'm delighted to hear you express concern. I think that, the process of being concerned is what makes somebody a good investor. Makes somebody focus on investments not in the context merely of the macro, but also of the micro, and personalizes it. Your job, Andy Millett's job, is to make his family more secure. And
Yes.
you do that not by being terrified, not by being so afraid that you lie in fetal position in a corner and don't do anything, but rather that you act rationally, both in the context of the market, but also in the context of how you want the market to behave for you.
Very well said. I really mean that. And again, I was thinking about our talk today, and that was the number one question. And really, it's been through the past, I would say 6 to 8 weeks, my portfolio, and I work with a portfolio manager. We've been selling, and I still have a lot of gold stocks. To all my viewers and listeners, don't get me wrong. I am also like Rick. I'm not negative by any means. Longer term on the sector, I'm not even. I don't even would say I'm negative. Short term, I just see it getting very. It's very frothy, and I'm very uncomfortable, is what I would say.
I'm not uncomfortable long term at all.
Right.
You mentioned before we went on the air that you're starting to get calls from people inquiring about gold.
A lot of
I would
calls.
point out to you that participation in the gold market in the broad economy is still nil. Most investors, I'm sure if you went to a financial planner in Atlanta or somewhere like that, the average financial planner, right? He or she would have a difficult time spelling gold. You and I operate in a community that focuses on gold. So the fact that our own community is energized, we're extrapolating this little gold ghetto that we live in to the broad society. There's a statistic which I have quoted in interviews with you in the past that I would like to repeat, and it may have changed. I don't have the updated numbers. But a couple of years ago, JP Morgan Chase said that the market share of precious metals relative to other asset classes in the United States was below 0.5%, which is to suggest that gold-denominated assets comprise 0.5% of the total savings and assets in the United States. The four-decade mean market share was 2%. If gold reverted to mean, that is to say, went from 0.5% to 2%, demand for the stuff would quadruple. So I do believe that the market has legs. I really believe that. And I don't care. I have the ability to get myself to my intermediate market goal right now. And I'm going to take it. And I should say, for the benefit of your audience, that I am not reducing markedly my total gold portfolio or even my junior portfolio. I'm reducing my junior portfolio by between 25 and 30%. And I'm reinvesting about half of those proceeds in gold, in Franco-Nevada, in Wheaton Precious, and in Agnico Eagle. I think another thing that you have to look at with regards to gold stocks, I understand I'm sending a positive and negative message here. I'm selling while believing. If you look at the shares of the high quality gold companies, the ones that are starting to generate free cash, what you will learn is that on a net present value basis, if you define net present value as the future value of free cash flows at today's gold price, Agnico Eagle is cheaper today than it was 18 months ago, despite the fact that the share price doubled, because the amount of free cash that they generated at $3,700 gold relative to the amount of free cash that they generated at $2,200 gold is markedly more. It's a strange concept to introduce to people that a stock is cheaper after it's doubled. But on an arithmetic basis, that's true. So I'm de-risking my gold portfolio as opposed to exiting my gold portfolio. I will say I'm building net liquidity, which is to say I'm taking some money all the way out of the sector. And I'm deploying that money in the oil and gas sector, which we can talk about later in the interview.
Well, I would love to talk about that. Let's pin that thought, though. I would love to talk about that, but I just want some clarity because, which you gave me clarity. I am reiterating what you said. You're deploying it into the best names, if you would, because of cash flow and because they're actually cheaper than they are despite the share price, well, in spite of their share price, they're actually cheaper than they are right now because of the cash flow that they're generating, correct?
Correct. Free
Interesting.
cash flow. I mean, it's important to note that after a long hiatus, the best of the best in the gold mining industry is delivering free cash flow, which is to say cash flow in excess of their needs in the business for sustaining capital and development capital. Many people define cash flow on a project basis and don't take into account tax or general and administrative expense or sustaining capital expense. They just talk about cash flow in excess of AISC. That's illusory. You have to look at free cash flow above necessary development expense, above necessary sustaining capital expense, above taxes and royalties, and above G&A. But the free cash flow yields that you're seeing in the gold mining industry right now, among the best of the best, are as good or better as they were in 1978 or 1979. We haven't
Wow.
seen this level of free cash flow literally for 40 years.
Wow. Okay, so let me pull on two things here that you just said. What do you think is going to happen with all of the majors, the big names sitting on all this cash flow? Do you think they'll increase their dividends? Do you think they'll just start going on a buying spree? What do you think will happen to that? What is the strategy, your strategy in that? Not only buying value, but are you buying into a company strategy and outlook? That's number one. Number two, I really want to belabor, I really want to hit this point. You're very optimistic 5 to 10 years out, and so am I. But we live also in a world, our group, if you would, our little postage stamp in this world, in our group, a lot of those people are not optimistic. Why are you optimistic? Those are two questions. So why are you optimistic?
Answering the questions in the order that they were asked, which is to say the use of the cash first, I feel pretty good for the next 2 years. The psychological scars borne by gold industry investors and the remaining gold industry investors are pretty deep. To go back to an earlier theme in this conversation, they are still concerned. And for that, a little history is in order. In the decade 2000 to 2010, if my memory serves me correctly, the gold price increased six or sevenfold, and the free cash flow per share in the mining industry declined. It took real skill to screw up a circumstance where the selling price of your product increased sevenfold. Companies built marginal deposits. They engaged in marginal merger and acquisition. They paid themselves too much. Virtually all of the management teams who presided over that idiocy were allowed to pursue other employment opportunities, which is to say they were fired by shareholders. The big institutional investors in the gold space, my friend John Hathaway is an example, are keeping the companies on a pretty tight leash right now. They don't want to see a repetition of the idiocy of that decade. So my suspicion is that this discipline holds for the next 2 years. I am already hearing from mining industry CEOs that younger institutional investors are saying, grow. For Christ's sakes, grow. In other words, they're asking them to be much more aggressive with the cash. In the decade 2000 to 2010, there was a phrase, growth gold. Well, that turned out to be an oxymoron. For your listeners, I would ask them to listen to the quarterly calls of the management teams and pay particular positive attention to CEOs who talk about growth in the company on a per share basis. If you look at Agnico Eagle or Wheaton Precious or Franco-Nevada, in my mind, the top three gold mining companies in the world, the CEOs talk about growth, growth in free cash flow more than they talk about growth in production on a per share basis. They are highly unlikely to dilute shareholders in a real business to pursue growth that isn't accretive on a per share basis. Other companies are growing for growth's sake, not for the shareholders' sake, or they
Right.
will be growing for growth's sake, not for shareholders' sake. Look as an example at the more recent success of Newmont. They grew by acquisition for 30 years. They acquired stuff and merged willy-nilly. At the end, they had a string of 8 consecutive quarters of missing their AISC guidance. Did one final Hail Mary acquisition, Newcrest. In the course of that acquisition, the institutional investor said, yes, we'll support it. But we'll support it according to a couple of caveats. One, that this merger generate a lot less G&A, general and administrative expense, in the combined companies than the sum of the two prior companies. In other words, you have to fire some folks. We want less G&A over more free cash flow. The second thing you have to do is you have to segregate between your tier one assets and your tier two assets, and you have to sell your tier two assets to bring down aggregate debt, but also to limit the sustaining capital investments you have to make to your 10 or 12 best mines. And you have to focus on your 10 or 12 best mines. And the management team did that. The management team worked out synergies. They allowed a whole bunch of employees who were underemployed at Newmont and Newcrest to pursue other employment opportunities where they might be more productive. And they sold a bunch of assets, hoping to raise $2.4 billion, or 2.2, I guess, if my memory serves me well. They've raised 4.7, with more on the way. But most importantly, they've begun to break the back of the AISC dilemma. They are able to focus now on million-ounce mines without being distracted by 120,000-ounce mines. And I think this is symptomatic of the circumstance that the whole gold industry has to face. It isn't just about rising gold prices. It's about corporate efficiency. It's about what do you do well. At my conference in Boca Raton, you may remember that I questioned both before the conference publicly and at the conference publicly, Ammar Al-Joundi, the CEO of Agnico Eagle. First of all, he answered every question in the context of per share, not Agnico Eagle, but per share. He also defined their core competence very well. He said they seek to be good, disciplined allocators of capital, but what they really are is a great construction company. They build mines well. You know, they focus like Ohio State used to on blocking and tackling. And he said in the future, they aren't going to grow for growth's sake, but rather they are going to acquire and build mines in the fairly immediate vicinity of where they have existing infrastructure, so that the new deposit provides additional leverage on capital already spent. Now, this is a fairly narrowly defined vision for a company that has the largest market cap of any gold mining company in the world. This is what you're looking for, Andy.
Well said. To answer the second question here is I do share your optimism going out. That being said, meaning on a macro level. That being said, I could be wrong. And also that being said, there's going to be a lot of hiccups, bumps, all of that going through this, whatever this is. Where do you
Sure.
get your optimism and why are you optimistic?
Well, I guess the conundrum is I'm optimistic because I'm pessimistic about the US dollar. My optimism is all about arithmetic. I just don't see any way in the world that our society can honor its entitlement obligations and its on-balance sheet obligations. And I also don't see any way that our society will tolerate an honest default. When I talk, as an example, about the fact that Social Security is insolvent in a show like yours, the comments are populated by outrage. I paid in for 35 years. You can't touch Social Security. Okay, I get it. I've paid in for 60 years. I'm 72 years of age. I paid in for 60 years. The truth is that the net present value of entitlement obligations exceeds, according to the Congressional Budget Office, $120 trillion. Gross federal income is $5 trillion. We got two choices. We could do an honest default where we say to old geezers like me, too bad, so sad, you paid in, no money, screw you, strong letter to follow, unlikely, old folks vote. Or you could do a dishonest default where you pay me the nominal value of my obligation as promised, but you inflate away the net present value and you don't index taxes to inflation. And that's what we're going to do. That's what we did in the decade of the 1970s. By the way, when I say the US dollar is going to lose 75% of its purchasing power, I don't mean relative to the Canadian dollar or the pound or the euro or the renminbi. I mean in an absolute sense. I think the US dollar will do okay. I don't think we'll see US dollar hegemony like we have the last 40 years, but I think it'll do okay against other currencies. I just think in an absolute sense, the US dollar won't maintain its purchasing power. It'll lose a lot. The consequence of that is that I think the nominal price of gold stays the same, which over 10 years is pretty attractive. I also think that the gold equities will likely perform better than gold. Now, I need to caveat that around the juniors. And I've said this on your show before, Andy. I'm always nervous about repeating myself, but then I need to realize that people who heard an interview a year from now probably aren't listening to this interview. And people listening to this interview probably haven't heard the old interviews. So I'll say this again. Amongst the juniors, there's probably, I don't know, 3,000 junior resource stocks listed worldwide. I'm going to suggest that 2,500 of them are valueless. It doesn't mean that they won't go up in price. That's a different circumstance. Price in the near term is a beauty contest. But they're valueless. And to the extent that one is constructing and maintaining a portfolio of juniors, hard work, stock selection, discipline, and a tolerance for volatility is absolutely critical. If
100%.
your technique is to read too many newsletters and listen to too many podcasts, and then on a hunch, bet a bunch, you have a 1 in 5 chance of being successful, which is pretty lousy. Even me, who has now 50 years' experience in the mining stock market, reaches the point in time where he decides that the sector is so volatile that he needs to take his capital out. Notice I didn't say I'll sell all the stocks. I'm going to repeat this. Take my capital out. If I need to take my capital out, I'm an old fat rich guy. People who work less hard, people who have less education in the sector need to manage their risk better than I.
Well said. And that I want you to talk about the Rural Classroom, how people can invest in themselves, as well as you analyzing portfolios. To all my viewers and listeners, I think it was 3 years ago you analyzed my portfolio. I probably need to send it to you again. But you analyzed my portfolio. It's not probably, it is the best value I see out there in this space. So tell me about that, and then we'll talk about value investing and where we see value. But go ahead.
Well, at least three ways to interact with me. The first, the gateway drug, if you will, Andy, is that any of your listeners who want can go to my website, Rural Investment Media, list their natural resource stocks, and we'll rank them 1 to 10, 1 being best, 10 being worst. And we'll comment on individual issues if you think our comments have value. I say we because it isn't just me, there's a team that does this. And that service is absolutely free. Please, no crypto. Please, no pot stocks. Please, no tech stocks. Just resource stocks. Rural Investment Media, list your natural resource portfolio. Please, no laundry list of 100 stocks that you're thinking about buying. The stocks that you own or are seriously considering, and we'll rank them for free. For free, Andy, means there's an absolute money-back guarantee because we charge you nothing. The second thing we have is the Rural Classroom. which is an educational service. And basic membership there, which is enjoyed now by 15,000 people, is also free. There are over 200 hours of instructional programming, including the Introduction to Natural Resource Investing, which is a valuation exercise, which is free. Again, ironclad money-back guarantee, discussion groups, interviews, free question and answer every week. Good value, free. The third level is that once a quarter, we do a deep dive. We do something called a boot camp. We take one subject, say uranium, say silver, say prospect generators, say single asset producers. We do an 8-hour-long deep dive with industry experts online, including panel discussions, all that kind of stuff. This is not free. It's $99 and 8 hours of your life. We work you very hard. If you're the kind of speculator who buys the Sunday paper for the funnies and the crossword puzzle, don't come. We're gonna wreck your Saturday here. And then we're gonna give you recordings because we're gonna give you more information in 8 hours than you can absorb in 8 hours. So really, it's gonna cost you $99 plus 16 to 24 hours. The course plus replaying the tapes once or twice. This also has a money-back guarantee. Every financial product I've ever sold, every financial education product I've sold over 40 years of selling them, comes with an absolute money-back guarantee. If you think after enduring 8 hours of this course that you didn't get your money's worth, I'll give you your money back. Now, in 40 years of offering these money-back guarantees, I've had to refund about 0.1% of the tuitions charged. But I'll do that, no problem. The final product, Andy, you've attended. It's my annual conference in Boca Raton, Florida. You can attend live, which I would prefer because there's lots of nonverbal communication takes place, or you can take place, you can participate from the comfort and convenience of your own home via live stream. In either case, we're going to work you for 4 days, not one day. You're going to endure between 45 and 48 hours of programming in 4 days. The tapes are going to be available for a year and you're going to need them. I put in the conference that I have to use the tape. And this again comes with an absolute money back guarantee. If for any reason you don't think you got your money's worth, you get your money back. By the way, this year we had over 700 attendees to the live portion. We had two refund requests. That'll tell you that the audience believed, despite the fact that we worked them like trolls, that they got their money's worth.
I fully endorse all of the above products, and that is a recommendation that is coming from me. I've participated in all, and I'm very and benefited immensely from all to all my viewers and listeners. Rick, let's talk about value here. Let me set this up because I'm looking at a world full of inflation and full of inflated assets. I do see one sector, and this is my own opinion. I want your opinion. I see the best value, and I see it as really, really almost deep value. The only sector that I see currently, and again, this is my own opinion, is in the oil and gas sector, if you would. I love it in here. Nobody's talking about it, but also like the price action, and I'm also looking at futures curves and that sort of thing, and also the craziness in this world that we live in. What's your opinion on that sector? And we've talked about the sector before. You cut your teeth in this business in that sector. So, but yeah, just give me your sense. And are you looking for value? I have deployed capital in this sector. Interested to yeah, interested in your two cents.
I think the oil stocks are where the gold stocks were 7 years ago. I think that the industry as a whole is selling at about half of its fundamental value. And I think the value is going to increase. I mean, I'm talking about the fact that I think it's selling at half its value at $65 WTI. I think WTI is going much higher. And
I
I
do
think the
too.
industry is selling at half its value at $65 WTI. So I think you get, if you will, a double bump, which is pretty exciting. The big thinkers of the world tell you that oil demand will go the way of the dodo in 2030 or 2032. I would ask them, if that happens, how they will fuel all the private jets that they fly to Davos to tell us to drive less. I think peak oil demand doesn't occur in my life, may not occur in your life. I think it happens 35 or 40 years out. The importance of that is that when people do net present value curves, they leave the tail off because they don't think there's going to be a tail. I think there's going to be a huge tail. It wouldn't surprise me if we enter into a deeper recession, which will moderate demand for oil, and which will postpone the oil stock boom that's inevitable. So I'm moderating the way I add to my oil and gas position because I'm a little afraid of the economy. That notwithstanding, you know, Andy, I've been investing now since 1971, I guess. And what that means is I was very impatient when I was a young guy and I had lots of time left on Earth. Now that I'm an old guy, I'm pretty patient. And if you delay the outcome of an inevitability by 2 years, if you've been doing it for 72 years, it doesn't matter much. You know, you sort of hope that you're going to be alive through the delay. So people who are traders, people who have trauma holding stock over a long weekend, probably don't want to invest like me. People who are interested in 5-year triples with big, good companies probably do need to consider investing like me. I read a stat the other day, three months ago, maybe, from the International Energy Agency, by the way, no friend of the oil and gas business, which estimates that oil companies on a global basis, including peristatals, are underinvesting in sustaining capital to the extent of about $2 billion a day. A day.
Think about that.
$700 billion a year. When you defer sustaining capital investments, what you do is you impair your ability to produce 3 years and 4 years out. The underinvestment that I'm talking about isn't going to matter in 2026. Might not matter in 2027. It's going to matter a lot in 2028. And that will impact price. What that means is that you need to invest in high quality companies that are, in fact, making the sustaining capital investments that will be able to produce in 2028 when their peers can't. The capital that I am net taking out of the gold sector right now is going to the oil and gas sector.
Me too. And to all my viewers and listeners, we're not going to go over names here, but I would like to ask you, like building a, and maybe this could be a potential boot camp for you, building an energy portfolio. Is it similar? Are you looking to just stick with the big names here, if you would, out there? Or are you working your way down the chain? I myself am doing both, but I don't want to speak for you.
I always believe that you start a portfolio with the best of the best. In other words, you buy the market beta, the best of the best. And as you've populated the market beta, market beta defined as the outperformance of that sector relative to the broad market, then you can become more speculative with the rest of your portfolio. You look to generate alpha. If you do an alpha-only portfolio, your risk is that the sector moves, but you selected stocks poorly. And the consequence of that is that you have failure at the firm level. And despite the fact that you are right about the sector, you don't get the money. That's wrong. Traditional bull markets, too, start with the best of the best. So the early part of the revival of a sector always rewards the best companies first. And that's how you ought to be. The oil and gas sector is so deeply undervalued cyclically that you don't need to go down into the juniors. I suggest that you buy the best of the best, you buy the best of the rest, and you don't worry too much about the juniors, despite the fact that the juniors is where I cut my teeth.
Got it. Well, Rick, we're going to end on that. And I think we nailed it as far as time. If you could, number one, I just want to thank you so much. I really, really do value the time, and also getting to know you. So I can't say enough about that. But if you can give a shout out again to your website, if people want to do business with you, if they want to a portfolio review, do that again for me.
Listen, my message by now, I mean, what I'm about is investor education, which is why I keep most of what I do free. Free is a price that's attractive to a lot of people, and it should be. So the best thing I do with regards to the juxtaposition of price and value is the rankings. Understand that the rankings are a snapshot in time. Something could occur in a company a week from now that changes my ranking. But if you use the ranking as instructional or education, you get full value. So rankings, once again, rule investment media. List your natural resource stock. If we know it, we follow about 800 companies in the ranking database. We will assign it a rank for free, and we will comment on individual issues if other comments that might have value. The idea of this for me is to introduce you to the Rule Classroom, where there is well over 200 hours of free instructional programming, and where every week I'm available, I conduct a free question and answer session, including company specific. My company answers are long because I use every company question as an instructional platform. In other words, I describe why they have the ranking that they have, what the upside is and the downside is. The recommendation is worth less than the education, and the education is free. For people who are deploying a lot of capital relative to their net worth in the sector, I recommend the boot camps. They are not free, but they're guaranteed. Which is to say, if you don't think you got your money's worth, you get your money back. There is an upcoming boot camp. Perhaps you can link to it. This is the third in our gold series. The first covered physical gold, how to own physical gold, why own gold, how to understand the sector. The second was the best of the best. We've done those two. The third is the rest, where we talk about the single asset producers, we talk about the junior producers, we talk about the developers, the explorers. We have a great faculty. We have John Hathaway, who's been a dean among institutional investors in gold for 40 years, not some Johnny come lately. We have Adrian Day, who's also been around for 40 years. We have Jonathan Goodman, who's in the space, second generation gold guy. His dad was one of my mentors, Ned Goodman. We have Lobo Tigre covering the juniors. Somebody, he's the newcomer. He's only got 25 years boots on the ground experience. This is 8 hours where we really, really, really work you hard. If you aren't prepared to work, don't come. If you are going to be a gold investor for $99, you get 150, 160 years of accumulated toil from the faculty.
Well, I know a lot of that faculty, and I've had them on the show. A lot of those, I know those guys well, most of them. So, Rick, I'm going to let you go. I think we nailed the time. I want to thank you again so much. I always enjoy our time together, and looking forward to having you on again soon.
Well, thank you, Andy, and thank you as a consequence of your efforts on behalf of your audience. You've worked hard for 30 years as a student, and I'm delighted that you're sharing the benefits of that with your audience. And I look forward to seeing you at the boot camps. I hope to seeing you in Boca next year.
100%. It's life-changing, and I'm not exaggerating. All right. Take care, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.